We'll proceed to the eighth case, United States v. Calvo Saucedo. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the court, counsel for the government, Todd Schultz, assistant federal public defender, representing the defendant appellant. The district court in this case erred in denying the defendant's motion to suppress. The search of the defendant's vehicle was objectively unreasonable. The removal of the door sill plate from the rocker panel of the passenger side of the car exceeded the scope of the defendant's general consent. When the scope of consent is at issue, the court is instructed to ask what a typical reasonable person would have understood by the exchange between the defendant and the officer. Insightful in this inquiry is the DEA's own position on the limits of a general consent search and this officer's experience as a patrol officer for the Granite City Police Department for 18 years. After the officer located the cocaine in the void space of the rocker panel, he then asked for written consent from the defendant so that he would be authorized to perform a more intrusive search, a search which would be broader in scope than that authorized by the defendant's general consent. This consent form, in addition to authorizing the search of the general areas of the car, luggage, containers, and the contents of those containers, it read in part and permitted the, quote, removal of any suspicious paneling or other vehicle components and the least intrusive access to any constructed compartment, end of quote. The plain language of this written consent to search form, which is the DEA standard consent to search form, the plain meaning is that once the officer has obtained this written consent, he can perform a more intrusive search, which would include the removal of suspicious paneling or other car components. It's evident from this language that this type of search, and by the officer's own admission, that this is a more intrusive search, which would be beyond the scope of what he was authorized to do pursuant simply to the defendant's general consent to search. Also instructive on the limits of general consent is this officer's experience. He was a patrol officer for 18 years. During those 18 years, he testified he conducted hundreds of vehicle searches and that he limited those searches to the general areas of the vehicle, which he described as luggage, underneath seats, the glove box, the center console, the trunk of those cars. Notably, no tools were ever needed to search these general areas as he described them. These areas that he searched for 18 years as a patrol officer are the areas that a typical reasonable person might expect an officer to search pursuant to general consent. The Supreme Court case of Jimeno indicates that a reasonable person knows that drugs are kept in containers and that consequently, when someone consents to a general search, an officer is going to be permitted to open those containers. A typical reasonable person, however, doesn't view the void space in his rocker panel as a container. The only people who view that as a container would be either DEA agents or drug traffickers, and the frame of reference is the typical reasonable person. The typical reasonable person does not have access to that area. It's not made to be accessed by him or her, and it's not part of the passenger compartment. The expectation in a general consent search is that it would be limited to areas that are accessible and used by the passengers of the car. It would not include areas that would require a tool in the dismantling of the vehicle itself. The simple fact that this officer underwent training which suggests the void space in cars is used to secret drugs does not expand the scope of general consent. This search was inherently invasive. It cannot be meaningfully distinguished in any way from the search of from the removal of a door panel, which this court has previously indicated would exceed the scope of a general consent to search.
Just so I can be clear about what we're talking about here, I do have the photos from the record. We're talking about this rubber strip that attaches actually to the door frame underneath, and there's a sort of an empty area between that rubber strip and the actual frame of the door, and that's the thing we're talking about.
That's correct. It's a hard plastic strip, and what happened is the officer pried it off using a knife. It is held in place by three clips. He then, after having pried it off, poked his knife into one of the small holes, and it's at that point that he located the cocaine.
Right. So that's what he's prying off with his pocket knife, not a section of the door frame or anything like that. And that's what the written consent to search form authorizes him to do?
Right. I believe that had the officer asked my client to sign the written consent to search form and then conducted this search, there would be nothing legitimately that could be complained of.
Right.
But by the officer's own admission, the written consent to search is a broader, more intrusive search, which clearly contemplates the type of search which he undertook under the auspices of a general consent search. And that would be the language of the DEA's own written consent to search form, in excess of that general consent. This search is inherently invasive. We're talking about an officer using a knife to pry apart the vehicle. Anytime you pry something apart, you're using force. The fact that he's using a knife would seem to indicate that he's not removing this component in the proper fashion. It's doubtful that the manufacturer of this vehicle suggests that in the event the rocker panel has to be examined, that you would pry it apart with a knife.
Well, isn't he just popping it with the knife?
That's how he described it. I guess it's the choice of language, but he had to pry it from the car. I believe the clips are held in place by pressure so that when he pried the piece that it would have popped out. As an additional grounds that the court held that the search, even if there was an issue as to exceeding the scope of consent, that the search was nonetheless justified by probable cause. The court indicated that probable cause existed based on this officer's extensive training, prior experience, and personal observations. This officer, however, testified that based upon this extensive training and 21 years of experience, that he did not believe that he had probable cause to arrest the defendant prior to locating the cocaine in the rocker panel. And it would appear from this court's opinions in Patterson and Faison that his assessment that the facts known to him at that time only amounted to reasonable suspicion is correct. In particular, in the case of Patterson, the court noted, with facts very similar to those before it today, that probable cause only finally existed when there was a positive dog alert and the officer noticed that there were screws missing from the tailgate interior. In this case, the officer does note that there is a chemical odor. He's not sure even whether this odor is silicone or not, and it's important, I believe, to note that there are many legitimate uses of silicone in a vehicle. This is not a situation like Faison, where there was the heavy odor of bug spray in the back of a trailer, which can't legally be explained. It's also significant that there was nothing suspicious about this particular rocker panel. There was no indication that it had been tampered with or that it had been modified in some way to allow drugs to be secreted there. I notice that I'm up with my time on this portion of my argument, and so I'll reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Clark.
Good morning, Your Honors. First of all, I'd like to provide some factual clarification about a minor matter here, and that is there's continued reference in the record to the defendant's turning right and crossing over a median. I just wanted to emphasize that we're not talking about a median dividing a northbound and southbound lane of a highway. But if you look at a map, you'd see that highways 55 and 70 coming out of St. Louis and going in the direction of Chicago are joined. But at a town called Troy, the Highway 70 peels off to the right and to the east. And so what's being described here is that the defendant briefly went beyond the 70 cutoff and continued northward toward Chicago just briefly, apparently realized his mistake, and then crossed over the grassy area that separates 55 from 70. Additionally, Your Honors, in response to your question, Judge Sykes, about the strip, yes, indeed, it was not the removal of the entire rocker panel that the officer performed. It was only the removal of the rubber strip, which is the exposure of the rocker panel. The top of the rocker panel is evident in Exhibit 2, but that's the top of the rocker panel. Where you can see the you can see two of the holes that bear the clips would go into to secure that rubber strip in place. Now, if you look at Exhibit 3, you would see the entire rocker panel exposed, but that's back after the consent after the written consent form has been signed. Exhibit 3 shows the rocker panel, which extends down below the two doors, between the front wheel and the back wheel. But that's not where the officer was looking initially. What he was looking at initially, and what the defendant primarily seems to be complaining of here, is simply the removal. He was looking from above the rocker panel after he had removed the rubber or plastic strip that is displayed in Exhibit 2. And as you can see from Exhibit 2, the top of the rocker panel there, on top of the rocker panel would be that rubber strip, but that is in an area on the floor of the vehicle right where the door comes out. So turning then to the argument, Your Honors, the government asserts that that probable cause trumps the issue of the consent issue in this case. The officers had probable cause based on many factors, including the following. First, while he was on highways 55 and 70, the defendant repeatedly reached over to his right toward the passenger side of the vehicle while being followed by the police vehicle. Secondly, the defendant, of course, missed the eastbound cutoff for 70 and continued briefly on a 55. He then cut over onto the grass to get onto the 70 eastbound highway, and then after the stop, he made several failed attempts to find a window button when the officer was motioning to him to turn down the window. The defendant then appeared nervous in that he was taking short breaths and his hands were shaking. His appearance was unkempt, as was the interior of the car. Next, a Mexican passport was on the console, but the defendant said he was traveling from St. Louis over to Indiana.
The interior of the car was unkempt. What does that mean?
I'm sorry?
The interior of the car was unkempt. What does that mean?
Well, there were various things strewn about the interior of the car. There were, for instance, food wrappers on the floor and that sort of thing. Of course, I'm not saying...
My kids' cars.
Of course, I'm not saying that that alone would be probable cause. But the intent of the officer in describing that as one of the factors was that it appeared that the defendant had probably been traveling a long distance, and that could explain the wrappers on the floor. Of course, as you say, that could not on its own be considered an element of probable cause.
We've got travel documents, right?
I'm sorry?
We've got travel documents.
Well, there was also a Mexican passport that was found, although the defendant said he was traveling only from St. Louis and going home to Indiana. So there was that issue as well.
Mark, what you described before the stop sounds more like an impaired driver than a possible probable cause for a courier, doesn't it?
I mean, an impaired driver?
Well, the way you describe, missing turn off.
I think...
impaired in the sense that he might have a possible DUI ahead, but how does that... those maneuvers suggest a stop by a task force officer looking for drugs.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that that's only, first of all, the only an initial observation by the officer. And it's made at a time when apparently the police vehicle was visible to the defendant. I believe that the implications from the transcript are that the defendant was nervous in observing what was behind him, therefore missed the turnoff. But there's no suggestion in here that he was impaired in any way by alcohol or any other means. Nevertheless, the traffic stop itself, of course, was justified by the mere fact of the improper lane usage and going from 55 across the grass and on to 70. So the most important factor, of course, is the smell of the silicone caulk coming from the inside of the vehicle when the defendant finally rolled down the window. But the officer observed no legitimate uses inside of the vehicle, like, for instance, a repair to a dashboard or something like that, that would justify the smell of the silicone caulk. Additionally, the officer noticed that the defendant was very nervous when the officer was writing out a warning ticket. Well, at any rate, Officer Thibault knew that drug transporters use silicone for both masking the odor of drugs as well as to seal up compartments where drugs could be stored. And in combination, these factors, all these factors that I've described, coupled with the officer's training and experience, provided probable cause, as the district court found.
Single key in the ignition.
There was also a single key in the ignition, which, of course, by itself doesn't mean anything, but could, as the officer described, mean that this was a drop car, potentially a drop car for drugs or money. Also, as the district court found, these factors obviated the need for consent or for a search warrant. The probable cause permitted the officer to remove the rubber strip that exposed the rocker panel. And PC existed here just as in Garcia, where the initial consent led the police to observe missing door handles, mismatched screws, and an observation of packages through the window opening. These additional factors in Garcia provided probable cause to open the door panel and seize the illegally transported drugs. And here we've got the same kind of situation. The numerous factors giving rise to PC provided the officer with the legitimate opportunity to inspect the or to remove the rubber strip and inspect the rocker panel. And again, of course, the inspection was very minimal. All he did was insert his knife through the small clip openings, and he discovered the cocaine powder on the tip of his knife. The scope of the search was no more nor less than a magistrate could have authorized by issuing a search warrant, and consequently, the probable cause justified a search of every part of the vehicle, including the inspection, the removal of the rubber strip, and the inspection of the rocker panel. Furthermore, the defendant did not limit his general consent, and instead he stood by while watching the officers go over to the door area and remove that strip. There is a reference in the transcript to the fact, I think it's on page 25, that the defendant was standing with the other officer, Officer Husky, behind the vehicle, and that Officer Husky informed Officer Thibault, who was the inspecting officer, that the defendant became very nervous while Thibault was in that door area. This, of course, the defendant did not, at this point, suggest to the officers that he wanted to limit the scope. So, impliedly, the defendant consented to this very limited search as well.
Once this rubber or plastic strip is removed, how is it put back on?
As I understand it from the transcripts, Your Honor, there are clips, as Mr. Schultz indicated, there are pressure-type clips that would be inserted back into the in through those holes that you can see in Exhibit 2, and after that they spring apart, and that keeps the rubber strip in place. I see that my time is up, and therefore I would ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz?
Just to address some of the facts brought up by the government, the officer conducting the search was not made aware that the defendant allegedly became nervous when he was searching the passenger side of the car until after that search had been conducted, and so that was not part of the analysis in his determination of probable cause. While the court and the government have concluded that probable cause existed based on this officer's training and experience, this officer, who was actually there based on all his training and experience, said he did not believe that he had probable cause at that point. With respect to the chemical odor, again, the officer doesn't know if it is silicone. And when it's said that he didn't see any legitimate uses, I believe his testimony makes clear what he means by not seeing any legitimate uses is my client didn't have a tube of silicone and a silicone caulk gun in the back of his car. There's no indication that the officer made any attempt to follow up with the officer, with the driver of the vehicle as to whether or not he had used silicone in any legitimate way. With respect to the failure of the defendant to object to the search of the rocker panel, that is not implied consent. The cases cited by the government involve situations where the search is within the scope of consent, and at that point it is on the defendant to further limit the scope of the search, but that is not the case before the court today. The search was beyond the extent of the consent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Clark, case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.